Now, they are making threats about controlling the Hormuz Straits in perpetuity, creating a tolling system and the like. That's not going to be allowed to happen. And the president has a number of options available to him if he so chooses to prevent that from happening. Obviously, I'm not going to discuss what those options are, and we're not going to discuss military tactics. The Department of War would be in charge of those things. I'd refer you to them, but obviously they're not going to discuss it with you either.
Wait, excuse me, wait. I don't want to do this now because it's easier. I'm so busy that I don't have time to do this. But I'm fighting wars and other things. But this is very important because this is going to be with us for a long time, and it's going to be, I think it'll be the greatest ballroom anywhere in the world. It's its highest level. Same height, exact height, if not higher, same height as the White House, exactly the same height. And if you look, you have the White House over here, you have this, and that's a duplicate of the wall, so it pays total homage to the White House, which is, I think, very important too.
This is my video update on this Monday afternoon, March the 30th, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with the news that the Russian ships heading towards Cuba, two ships, one gas, one oil, I believe. These ships will, actually, they've arrived in Cuba, and the United States will not do anything. They will not intervene. They have not intervened. There is the U.S. blockade, but these ships were allowed to go through and to arrive to Cuba so that they can provide much needed oil and gas to a blockaded Cuba, blockaded by the United States. And so Trump was asked about this, allowing the Russian ships to enter Cuba because the United States has a blockade against Cuba, and the Cuban people are suffering because of this blockade, because Trump wants a regime change in Cuba. And the other day in one of his speeches at one of these GOP think tanks, Trump actually said that Cuba is next when it comes to his regime change plans. But Trump was asked about the Russian ships arriving in Cuba and the United States not doing anything. And Trump said that he has no problem with ships entering Cuba if they're providing some oil or some energy. He says it's not going to make a difference, these ships, because Cuba is set to fall. And we called this on the Duran. We did a video on March 20th, and we said that most likely these Russian ships will be allowed to arrive to Cuba because these ships are just going to provide short-term relief for Cuba. About a month or two of oil and energy is what these ships will give Cuba. And we did this video when it was announced by Russia that they would be sending these ships to Cuba. From the New York Times, U.S. allows Russian oil tanker to reach Cuba despite blockade. The tanker full of crude oil could reach its expected destination by Monday, providing a lifeline to the island amid intense U.S. pressure. I recall two ships, one oil, one gas. Maybe the oil tanker arrived and the other ship is going to arrive later this week. But I did recall that it was two ships. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Anyway, 1 to 2 months of oil. And what we said on that Duran program from the 20th of March, you can check it out on the Duran channel, is that this will give Cuba a month or two of time and space so that they can make a decision on what they're going to do moving forward. Will they negotiate with the United States? Will the Cuban government try to negotiate with the United States? Is the United States capable of negotiating with? Can you trust the United States in negotiations if you're Cuba? Do you try to move closer to BRICS? Do you try to work something out with China, with Russia? Can BRICS, can China and Russia help? Can they prevent a U.S. blockade? Can they prevent a U.S. regime change operation? Cuba is far away from China and from Russia. Does the Cuban government want to move closer to China and to Russia? And Trump, he's bogged down in Iran. He's got a huge problem in this war in the Middle East. And so for the Trump administration, 1 or 2 months, it's probably not that big of a concern for them. So that's an update with the Russian oil making its way to Cuba. And since we're on the subject of oil, U.S. President Trump gave an interview to the Financial Times, and he was asked about Iran and Iranian oil, and Trump said, and I quote, "To be honest with you, my favorite thing is to take the oil in Iran. But some stupid people back in the U.S. say, why are you doing that? But they're stupid people. My favorite thing is to take the oil in Iran. My favorite thing is to take the oil. I like it. I like taking the oil. I'm like a pirate. I like to take oil. I like to see ships. I like it. Like it a lot." What a statement from the U.S. president, huh? My favorite thing is to take the oil in Iran. That's what I really want to do, is to take the oil. And to rename the Strait of Hormuz the Strait of Trump. That's what I really want in all of this. I don't care about the uranium. I want the oil. I want the oil. That's what Trump is saying. Okay, so Trump was on Air Force One speaking to the media and taking questions on Iran. And the president said that Iran is going to do everything that we want them to do. If they do not do everything that we want them to do, then they're not going to have a country left. Lots of ships here in Limassol, huh? Trump also said that the 15-point plan is moving along, presented to Iran by Pakistan, Pakistani mediators. And his claim is that everything is moving forward, and there's going to be two more additional points added to the 15-point peace plan. So it's going to be a 17-point peace plan. No longer 15 points, but 17 points. Trump is making it out as if Iran is agreeing to the Witkoff 17-point peace plan. By the way, Al Jazeera announced that Iran is not engaged in negotiations with the United States, at least not direct talks with the United States, and has rejected the 15-point peace plan, soon to become the 17-point peace plan. And then Trump, he said that Iran gifted him 8 tankers plus 2 and an apology. So 10 tankers and an apology last week. And he told the media that yesterday it was announced that 20 tankers, Pakistani flag tankers, were going to pass through the Strait of Hormuz, 2 tankers every day. And Trump framed this as another gift. 30 tankers full of oil and gas and all kinds of things as a gift, a present, a tribute to Trump from Iran, from the shadow leader of Iran who he is negotiating with, whose name cannot and shall not be revealed. It's Zelensky. Alensky is playing the part of the shadow leader of Iran. When he's not playing Churchill, he's playing the shadow leader of Iran. I'm an actor, Podolyak. I can play many roles. I can play Churchill. I can play shadow leader of Iran. I can play president of Ukraine. I can play piano with my peepee. And anyway, Trump is now saying 30 tankers gifted to him. 30 tankers as a gift from Iran. Unbelievable, huh? Unbelievable. Peace through strength. Promises made, promises kept. So what's really going on with these tankers? Pakistani flag tankers, not U.S. flagged tankers. So what's going on is that Pakistan is at the moment, I would say, the main go-between for diplomacy between the United States and Iran. So Pakistan is the third party that is passing messages back and forth between Iran and the United States, mostly Pakistan. They're trying to also get some sort of a formal negotiations going, sit-down negotiations, most likely between Vance and Arachi. This is something that Pakistan, their foreign minister, said they're trying to put together, more formal negotiations. And Iran has allowed some countries to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Those countries are China, Russia, Malaysia, Thailand, India, and Pakistan. I believe those are the countries. I may be missing one or two. But these are countries that Iran wants to keep on side. Some of these countries are allies, friends, partners, BRICS countries. A country like Pakistan is a country that is acting as a third party mediator, passing messages back and forth between the United States and Iran. So Iran is saying, okay, Pakistan, you're helping us out. And they want to keep Pakistan on side. They don't want any instability in Pakistan. It's a neighbor. You don't want any instability happening in Pakistan right next door while you're going through a war, through an attack, trying to defend against an attack by the United States and Israel. So you want to keep things as stable as can be in Pakistan. And you want to keep them on side, right? So that's why they're allowing the oil under Pakistan flags to move through. And my understanding is that these tankers under Pakistan flags are taking oil to Asia. I believe one of the cargoes was heading towards Philippines or Malaysia, I read. And that's their destination. These are not tankers, 30 tankers full of oil that is going to go to the United States as a present. That's not what's going on here. And it's just a small part of all of the ships that are stuck in the Strait of Hormuz that are not passing. There are a lot of ships that are not allowed to pass. Or if they do want to pass, they're going to have to pay the Tehran toll booth. That's what they're calling it. And it's now official, actually. A member of the Iranian parliament's National Security Committee actually announced that passage through the Strait of Hormuz will become paid in accordance with new Iranian law. By the way, oil is now at $116. So oil continues to move up on its way to $150. But it's now official. There is going to be a fee that will be charged for tankers that want to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. And of course, U.S. and Israeli tankers, or tankers with a destination of, say, the United States, will not be allowed to pass through the Strait of Hormuz, I imagine. But that's what's going on with these tankers. They're Pakistan flag tankers heading to various destinations, and Iran wants to keep things good with Pakistan. They want to keep Pakistan on side, and Pakistan is playing an important role as a type of mediator. And what Trump has done, is what Trump always likes to do, is he likes to exaggerate things. He likes to spin things in his favor. He likes to manipulate certain narratives to make him look good. And that's what he's doing here. He's taken the diplomacy of Pakistan, because a lot of this is the effort of Pakistan and the diplomacy of Pakistan to get tankers through the Strait of Hormuz and to show that there is trust between Pakistan and Iran, and therefore Pakistan can be trusted as a mediator. And Trump is taking all of the work of Pakistan and all the diplomacy and confidence building that Pakistan is engaged in, and he is spinning it in his favor by saying that this is a gift. Oh my God. And people are going to believe this. No doubt about it. No doubt about it, that there's going to be the hardcore Trump supporters that are going to actually believe that there are 30 tankers packed with oil that are going to make their way to the United States and be presented to Trump as a gift. Trump is going to stand at the shores of the United States, somewhere in, I don't know, in New York or whatever, at some port, and he's going to receive 30 tankers are going to come his way. Ah, here are the tankers, my gift. I like it. I like it a lot. Hey, Witkoff, take those tankers and put them over there. Rubio, take those tankers and put them over there. I like it. Oh, my God. What else did Trump say? He said that we negotiate with Iran and then we always have to blow them up. Okay. Trump diplomacy in action. We talk with them, but then we have to blow them up. Right. So that was Trump on Air Force One, taking questions from the media as he always does. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the U.S. military operation that is being planned may involve the extraction of Iran's uranium. The president hasn't made a decision, the U.S. official said, as he considers the risk to U.S. troops. The Wall Street Journal says that while the president has not made a decision about this operation to enter Iran and to extract the uranium, he is generally open to the idea, according to officials, because it could help accomplish his central goal of preventing Iran from ever making a nuclear weapon. You know, you had that with the JCPOA, FYI, President Trump. Let's walk this way. It is windy. Let's see how the mic holds up. Incredibly windy. Let's see how the audio is on this video. Wow. Okay. So, the central goal is to prevent Iran from ever making a nuclear weapon. So we got to go in and extract the uranium. That central goal was being accomplished with the JCPOA, an internationally recognized UN-approved, Security Council-approved treaty and agreement that Trump tore up. Just tore it up. I don't like it. Tearing it up. And so now he's going to send military into Iran, maybe, possibly send military into Iran to find the uranium. Where's the uranium? Where is the uranium? Got to look for the uranium. Let's find the uranium. Easy peasy. Small country, small population. A couple of buildings here, a couple of buildings there. Knock on some doors, maybe post some flyers. You could put some flyers up looking for some uranium. Call this number. Yeah, shouldn't be hard at all. No problem. Find the uranium, put it in your backpack, and walk on out. Easy operation. Who needs the JCPOA when you can just walk into Iran and pick up the uranium? So the whole energy pause, all of that, the 10-day energy pause, striking out at power plants, that's gone nowhere. Israel hit energy facilities yesterday in Iran, causing blackouts in Tehran. The energy has since been restored. The lights are back on, but there were blackouts, I don't believe in all of Tehran, but in the north part of the city and in other areas of the city, there were blackouts. And the response from Iran, my understanding is that they hit a facility in Haifa. They also smashed some facilities in Kuwait, including hitting a desalination plant. But it seems as if the strike on the desalination plant was more of, it seems it was more of a warning than the goal to completely destroy it. But the escalation continues towards a very catastrophic event. If Israel and the United States continues to go after the power plants in Iran, Iran has already said that they will retaliate by going after the power facilities as well as desalination plants in the surrounding region. A U.S. official told Israeli news, I-24, that by the beginning of next week, there will be enough forces to enable a significant ground operation against Iran. And Israel has also said that its soldiers will not join any U.S. ground operations in Iran. Israel will continue its airstrikes into Iran, but it is not going to put any boots on the ground. That will fall on the United States. For Israel, the distance between Israel and Iran means that logistics will not play in Israel's favor if it was to put boots on the ground, because the United States is much closer to Iran. So logistically, it's easier for the United States to put boots on the ground. And for Israel, there's quite a distance between Israel and Iran. So logistically, they don't want to undertake an operation of boots on the ground. This is the outdoor gym, by the way, in Limassol. It's free. It's a free outdoor gym. And you can donate money to the gym. So people come and they pitch in. But you have all kinds of outdoor weights and equipment, and you can work out. I would stay longer, but there's music blasting. Over there, they've got Eminem, Lose Yourself, blasting over there, and I don't want to stick around there too long because then I'll get a copyright strike. But yeah, it's a pretty cool place to get a workout. Let's see if I can maybe get a little closer without getting some of the music. If I have to turn the audio down, I will. Heavy, effective. It's a good gym. It's a really good gym. It's got everything you need. Man. Wow, is it windy? So, let's see here. What's next? What is next on the agenda? Bets that an invasion is coming. Ground operation incoming. The pizza index is exploding. Gay bars are suddenly empty and suspicious wallets just placed $200,000 on this, on the invasion possibility coming soon. Potential payouts now over $1 million. So the pizza index, the empty gay bars, and and suspicious wallets are placing bets, all indicators that something is going to happen. Interesting indicators. At least the first two are very interesting indicators. What else? The Parliament Speaker, who Trump at one point in time said was going to be the next leader of Iran, Mr. Ghalibaf, hardliner Ghalibaf, doesn't look like he's going to be the leader that Trump chooses for Iran, right? Because his posts on X are pretty hard line. He posted, heads up, pre-market so-called news or truth is often just a setup for profit-taking. Basically, it's a reverse indicator. Do the opposite. If they pump it, short it. If they dump it, go long. See something tomorrow, you know the drill. Not financial advice, everybody. But that's what the Speaker of Iran's parliament is saying. Calling out the market manipulation and the speculation that is taking place in this war by various people who seem to have some sort of inside track on everything that Trump is about to announce and do. So Al Jilani, he is in Germany today. He is going to be meeting with BlackRock Mertz. Al Jilani, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, one-time leader, $10 million bounty on his head. Now he is going to be in Germany meeting with Mertz during the Easter season, Easter holidays, where there are many Christians being killed in Syria. Not a good look, Mertz. Not a good look at all. Yeah, Al Jilani is cracking down on Christians. Very ugly, very ugly, very disturbing. Especially now during Easter. Any time of the year. But he's cracking down especially hard during the Easter holiday. And what does Mertz do? He decides to invite him over to Germany. Shake his hand, take some photos. Despicable. Absolutely despicable. BlackRock Mertz. We had the news of the blocking of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The Catholic cardinal was blocked from giving the Mass at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre on Palm Sunday. Blocked by Israel, is my understanding of things. The Israeli officials blocked him from giving Mass. I think this is historic, actually. It's historic that the Catholic cardinal was not allowed to go to the church. And this has drawn outrage from Italy, from Poland, and from Spain. All three of these countries, which are traditional Catholic countries, they've condemned Israel's blocking of the Catholic priest to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I believe Italy has actually summoned the Israeli ambassador so that they can have a word with him or her. So sticking with Europe, we have an article in Politico with the title, Five Ways the EU Could Cope with Hungary If Orbán Wins Again. Oh, they're starting to come to terms with the possibility of Orbán winning the elections. The EU-sponsored polls show the opposition is way ahead, but I've seen other polls, more neutral polls, which show that Orbán is ahead, though the race is going to be tight in Hungary in the next couple of weeks when the elections happen. But the EU is now starting to to think about what they're going to do if Orbán does win in Hungary in a couple of weeks. And we have five ways the EU is going to cope should Orbán win the elections. The first way that the EU is going to deal with another Orbán term in office is to shift the voting from unanimity to a qualified majority. Yeah, they're going to need unanimity to agree to shift the vote to a qualified majority. In other words, every country in the EU is going to have to agree to a qualified majority voting structure. You would have to be freaking stupid as an EU member state, especially the smaller countries, the less powerful countries, to agree to that. For example, Cyprus or Greece would have to be absolutely stupid to say, okay, we'll lose our voting power. Okay, sure, Ursula. We agree to just a majority voting system. The other way they're going to deal with Orbán is a multi-speed Europe. Two different European tracks. A Europe strong and a Europe light, or a Europe heavy and a Europe light. And they'll move Hungary into the Europe light track. Increasing financial pressure and freezing funds. They're already doing that to Hungary. No big deal. Legal actions and fines. They're already doing that to Hungary. And then you have the nuclear bomb, which is Article 7. Take away Hungary's voting rights, which is probably what they're going to try and do. But once again, that would need a unanimous vote. That would need unanimity to take away Hungary's rights to impose Article 7. And you would have to be freaking stupid if you're an EU member state, especially a smaller, weaker EU member state, to agree to removing Hungary's voting rights to Article 7. Because if they do it to Hungary, then they can do it to you. That's the Limassol Oval. Interesting structure. I guess new flats going up here. So let's turn to Finland, where a Ukraine drone crashed in Finland. And yes, it has been confirmed that it was a Ukraine drone. Confirmation that Ukraine is using the airspace of EU member states, of NATO member states, to attack Russia and to attack the St. Petersburg region. That is what Ukraine is doing. That is why Russia is not able to knock down these drones, because they're not able to track them, because they're not flying such a long distance over Russian airspace to try and get to Moscow, to try and get to St. Petersburg. What Ukraine is doing is that they're flying over European airspace. And then they make their way to Russia, and they hit St. Petersburg, or they try to hit Moscow. So is Europe involved in all of this? Are the EU member states involved in this? Are they allowing Ukraine to do this? Are they looking away as Ukraine uses their airspace to attack Russia? Interesting questions to ask EU officials and EU member state leaders, including Alexander Stubb, who posted on X, "This morning, drones have strayed into Finnish territory. One of the drones has been confirmed to be Ukrainian in origin. I want to emphasize that there is no military threat to Finland. Our authorities reacted to the situation immediately. I thank the authorities for their efficient action. The investigation of the incident continues. We are monitoring the situation closely. The authorities maintain readiness to react to future incidents. Finland stands ready to monitor and protect its territory." Well, Finland, maybe you should protect your territory against Ukrainian drones. Article 5. Ukraine drones are crashing in NATO member states' territory. Article 5. Stubity Stoob. So what does Stoob do in order to distract away from this very embarrassing event? Notice that in his post on X, he doesn't mention Ukraine at all. He doesn't want to say Ukraine drones. No. Don't want to say that. Don't want to mention that these are Green Goblin drones. So So what does Stoop do in order to distract away from this very embarrassing event? He puts out a video claiming that Russia is losing 30,000 soldiers every day at the hands of the Ukraine military. And they're losing more soldiers than they can recruit. And because Russia is losing so many soldiers and they're in such a terrible situation, that Finland needs to be prepared to deal with a general Russian mobilization. That's how Stoop distracts from the embarrassment of having a Ukraine drone land on Finnish territory. My question to Stoop and my question to the Baltic countries like Estonia, which also have had Ukraine drones crash on their territory, are you allowing these drones to pass over your territory so that they can hit Russia? Are you allowing this to happen? Or is Ukraine doing all of this without letting you know, right? They're doing it secretly. It's all top secret. They're not telling Stoop that Ukraine drones are going to be passing over Finland to then detour and make their way to hit Russia. Is that what's going on? Is this happening without you being notified, Stoop, by Zelensky? Is that possible? Your buddy Zelensky is not telling you that drones are going to fly over Finland so that they can attack Russia? That would not be cool if that is the case. So, anyway, that's what's going on there. Should we do some clown worlds? Let's do some clown worlds. And let's start things off with an announcement from Spain that they will be donating 5 Patriot missiles to Ukraine, PAC-2 missiles to Ukraine. It's a $15 million gift, which was confirmed after Sanchez met with Zelensky, is according to El País. 5 Patriot missiles. That's going to last a total of 5 seconds. 5 seconds is how long those missiles are going to last. We also have the news that the EU, according to Politico, is losing its interest in Ukraine and Moldova becoming members of the European Union. And what the EU wants to do now is that they prefer to fast track wealthier countries, candidate countries like Iceland and Norway. And Ukraine media is sounding the alarm. They're very upset over this development because the EU is not interested in poorer countries entering the European Union, such as Ukraine and Moldova, and they're much more interested in wealthier countries entering the European Union, which tells me that the EU grift is winding down. Not much money left in Project Ukraine. You got the $90 billion. That's it. The last big payday is the $90 billion. And once that $90 billion is paid, there's just not much money left in Project Ukraine. And there was never much money in Project Moldova. So what do you need to do if you're the European Union? You got to look towards the rich countries. Iceland, Norway. Let's look at them. Let's see how much money they've got. They've got a lot of money. A lot of money, says Ursula. A whole lot of money. We could create all kinds of funds using the money from Norway and Iceland. Let's fast track them. All right. Anything else? How about Pete Hegseth unveiling the Greater North America, a new strategic map from Greenland to the Gulf of America. Every sovereign nation north of the equator is part of America's security perimeter. I've talked about this in previous videos. Hegseth has actually talked about this in the past, about 3-4 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. Hegseth brought up the Greater America map, or the Greater North America project or initiative, or whatever they're calling it. And that's the United States controlling everything in its hemisphere. It's all the U.S. It's all the U.S., the Greater North America. From Canada to Greenland to South America. This is what Hegseth announced yesterday. For the second time, he has talked about Greater North America.
Is it Greater North America or Greater America? Greater North America, but he incorporates Panama Canal, and I believe they incorporate South America into their Greater North America as well. But definitely Greenland, Canada, Panama, Panama Canal. That's all going to be part of the U.S.'s his hemisphere of control. So I guess you could have greater China, greater Russia, greater India, greater Cyprus. Why not greater Cyprus? Greater EU initiative, greater EU project. I don't know. All the powers can now talk about controlling their sphere. Of course, the United States is not only interested in their sphere, they're also in a war in the Middle East against Iran. Greater Israel, greater Israel, greater North America, greater Israel. Anyway, that is the video. I will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on, well, this rock is not steady. We are on Rumble and Telegram and X. Go to the Duran Shop, pick up some merch. Check us out on Substack. I will see everybody tomorrow. And in about a month's time, maybe 2 months, this will be full of people. I believe this must be the Crown Plaza, now that I think about it. Yeah. All right, take care.